Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
GQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
You know, you just can't get good help like that anymore. Unfortunately, I do. Good evening and welcome one more time. Thankfully, to Madam Perry's Salon. I am your host and your cruise director, Madam Perry, and I am so happy to be here, and I'm so happy that I have such a wonderful audience and so many fantastic guests. Listen, if you've been following lately, and by the way, thank you, first of all, for listening, for sharing with your friends, and for all the guests that have been on, and for all the guests that call back in and talk to other guests. I am so grateful to you all because, as you know, you can follow on. If you're listening right now live, actually, let me say this. If you're listening now at July the 11th, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and you're listening on Blog Talk Radio, you're going to see a little rectangle in pink with white letters that say follow. If you haven't done so, and if you would, please click that button to follow. That way you'll know what's coming up, who's coming up, because one of the saddest things in the world is when people say, why didn't you remind me that so-and-so was going to be on? Or why didn't you tell me Rudy Sarzo was going to be on? I love Quiet Riot. Or why didn't you tell me, you know, Michael Flynn was on? I love true crime. Matt Coyle, great author. Why didn't you tell me? Well, you know what? I can only tell you so much before I start to feel like a stalker, like I'm intruding. But if you click that button, you'll already know. Now, of course, the shows are always available, whether you follow on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or Stitcher, iTunes, and Blog Talk Radio. Whether you follow on any of those or subscribe, the downloads afterward, the shows are always available afterwards, possibly in perpetuity. For download, and there is still no cost to do so, thanks to my cool sponsors, and thanks to you for listening, so the people do want to sponsor. But sometimes you just want to be on live so you can hear it then, in case you want to call in and talk to somebody that you admire and join the conversation, because we have some, as I said, fascinating guests, fascinating callers, listeners, so the conversations get quite intriguing. So just follow that way. You'll always know what's going on. I was going to say, coming up soon, first of all, I got to tell you who's coming. By the way, we want to thank some of the recent guests. Cindy DeSilva, she's the busiest woman I know, and I've known her for a few years. Well, maybe only about 4 years, but I know she's busy. She's on tour with a couple of brands that she manages, Hollis Brown, Bruce Sedano, both of whom are going to be on the show next week. Also, the Zombies, yes, the Zombies from the 60s, and she wrote a book about the Zombies, The Odyssey Oracle, The Zombies in Words and Music, and was on recently talking about it. Also, we had Denny Tedesco talking about, that was on June 13th, but the show was still available. He was talking about a documentary film he made called The Wrecking Crew, The Wrecking Crew about, of course, the famous musicians in L.A. back in the 50s, 60s, some 70s. His father, Tommy Tedesco, was one of those musicians. And they, it was like Carol Kaye, bass player, Hal Blaine, Earl Palmer, so many musicians. They did work for Phil Spector, making his Wall of Sound. They did work for, they did, I think, most of the Pet Sounds album with Brian Wilson, because I think one of the stories on there was that some of the Beach Boys, you know how bands, you get to fighting like that, you know, they're part family, too. And so they weren't always available to record. Plus, he needed some really spectacular musicians, and these people were Sonny and Cher, really just about anything, association, grassroots. A lot of people back then, you know, think it was that certain band, but it wasn't. It might have all been the Wrecking Crew sometimes. And so his documentary, The Wrecking Crew, is still available. Go to his website, wreckingcrewfilm.com. We also had Joe Vitale, drummer for, oh God, was he fun. Joe Vitale, drummer for Joe Walsh. And he was also the drummer on the movie Ricky and the Flash and several other, and get his book too. So, and then coming up, like I said, we got more people, Greg Hawkes from The Cars and Utopia, Prairie Prince from The Tubes and Utopia, and Todd Rundgren, Bruce Sedano, songwriter, and was married until she passed to Donna Summer. So looking forward to those. But tonight, now if you've been listening the last few years, you know that I love to have every year sometimes I have two Halloween specials, and one of the best things about having a podcast and having all the fascinating people that I've got the fortune to know, I have some great people to contribute to the Halloween shows. And one of them is a band, you know, people that read other people's work, whether they're writers or actors or musicians. And one group or one musical duo I found when I was working for a client who wrote steampunk books, and I found them and hooked them up with him to create music for his work. That was Jeff Musgrave, and they are all over the place. This duo, the music is called Victorian Chamber Metal, and the duo is a couple, and yes, they are a husband and wife couple of classically trained musicians, Lady Sarah Black and Braxton Blue. They are just magic to me. They are fantastic musicians. They both have post-grad backgrounds in music with composition, and Braxton's is in double bass, perform with theaters, they perform at cons, they are everywhere. And you've heard them, if you've listened to Madame Perry Salon the last few years, you've heard them several times because they're one of my favorite bands to play. And tonight, thank goodness, they are here with me live. I am so excited to welcome, for their first time as a featured guest on Madame Perry Salon, Valentine Wolf. Welcome to Madame Perry Salon, Lady Sarah and Braxton. Come on in, get comfy.
Oh, hello.
Thank you so much. Good evening, Madame.
Hello.
Perry.
Well, good evening, Braxton. Please find a nice cushion to sit on. I know I had some thriller writers in here recently. Pardon me?
Oh, I was going to say we love it. We sent a note to the genie, and we're so excited that tonight the salon looks very much like an abandoned mausoleum. We feel so much at home now. Thank you for – I'm told that changed temporarily. Thank you for making that accommodation for us. We're very happy. But the cushion's still comfy for the stone.
Whatever I can do to make for the guests, because I cherish you all. And just, you know, that abandonment, that's because I had to have it cleaned out. I had a couple of suspense writers in here. I'm not going to name any names, but their initials were Brett Wright and Rick Cornell and Becky Kyle. And those guys were hiding burritos and stuff in the cushions and eating, you know. I don't care if they're eating, but they were all that sneaking around and leaving things behind. And so, you know, I had to have the place kind of, you know, cleaned out. And so, yeah, before you got here.
We're kind of a studious metal band, so we're not going to leave anything behind. But thank you for having us.
Okay. Well, I am thrilled because, you know, you have been played on this show probably as much or more than probably in the top five of all the people I play. I think the top five would be of people I play whenever I want to add in a song or do something or do the Halloween shows are you, Valentine Wolf, and some other people. I don't know if you know them all. Hugh Cornwell. He was in the band called Stranglers, you know, Stranglers.
Okay.
Kind of fits in the themes. Cheetah, oh, my God, now these are all fitting. Cheetah Chrome, who was with the very popular 80s band called The Dead Boys.
Mm-hmm.
a punk band. Yeah. They used to play CBGBs, and actually, and he was in a. There was a video made, a documentary about them, and the guy that played Ron Weasley in Harry Potter, he was hired to play Cheetah.
All right.
And yeah, and somebody else that you may well know, Veronique Chevalier.
Oh yeah. We've it's been a few years since we've seen Veronique. We were on a panel with her a long time ago.
Was
it
at DragonCon?
It was either Dragon or it was a convention in Atlanta. I can't remember, but yeah. So if Veronique, you're listening, hi. I hope you're well, and it's been a while, but I remember her. Yeah, it's really cool.
It's been a while since I've seen her as well. I've had her on because I've had features. I've had her on with Jasper Bark, and so much fun and such a fascinating gal. And so hopefully she'll be back soon. So in other words, yeah, you're up there in my top five acts that I play. Wow. I love your music so much. So tell me how it came to be called. And everything that I read about you, including your own material and website, I have called it Gothic Metal Stylings. What is it? Bass Distortion, Ambiance. And then, of course, Victorian Chamber Metal. And what do you like to call your music? And where do these terms come from? And where do your influences come from? I want you to just take it away.
Okay. Well, a lot of it is not very romantic. A lot of the labels we use for our music, really, it's just exactly what it sounds like. We like Victorian Chamber Metal. If I recall correctly, our friend, one of our friends, came up with that term, Derek Neiman, I think, is the person who deserves credit for that. I think that happened the first time we were at DragonCon back in 2012. And I think the rationale behind that is, symphonic metal is a thing with, big bands and symphony orchestras. And we figured since we're just a duo, that's chamber music, so we can have chamber metal. And then Victorian, I guess, is sort of a catch-all term for, what are the things that you asked about, what influences our music? Literature actually is a huge, huge influence on us, especially 19th century Gothic horror, which we're actually, there's another term kind of to, set up the Gothic horror revival, the 19th century Gothic horror revival in particular, that was coined by a few friends of ours, most notably Derek Tatum. That's dreadpunk, which is things like Crimson Peak and sort of bands who like gothic themes but aren't necessarily, when you call your music gothic, that has some very specific stylistic connotations, and we're not really like 70s, sort of that. That's not really too early for post-punk, but we're not really like a gothic band the way, say, Susie and the Banshees or Joy Division were. We like those bands, but that's not necessarily what we do. We love heavy metal. Now, granted, metal is, I think, a really, really super diverse field of music. There's so many different bands doing really, really cool things, and it's really all over the place. But sometimes it can be weird for a metal crowd when, we turn up and there's no guitarist and we don't have a drummer or anything like that. So, but for me, it's heavy metal. It's definitely the kind of music we play. And we use the term gothic, I think, just to help people, kind of conceptualize and contextualize what we do. We write songs about, again, macabre themes, horror themes, and horror, especially in this case, like as I said, to be more literary based. It's not that we hate slasher films, but we're not really super into that in terms of things that inspire us. So that's really where a lot of it comes from. And a lot of it is, I think, also we like classical music that, maybe a little darker. Probably my favorite piece of all time is the Mozart Requiem. And I really like especially the old Agamben music, music from the, late 1600s, early 1700s, sort of eerie, otherworldly feel. So I think, and then you mentioned the ambient stuff. Would I do a lot of soundscaping and looping, saying dark ambient soundscapes, that's just exactly what it is. It's music that to use Brian Eno's definition, hopefully as interesting as it is ignorable, but it's also so that's the part.
Yeah.
And then dark is, you know, we like themes that are usually when I'm describing my ambient music to people, we say it's just sort of like Hearts of Space on NPR, but instead of inner peace music, it's for abandoned and insane asylum music, and that kind of just it lets people to know what to expect if they've never heard Valentine Wolf before.
All right, and Lady Sarah, how what would you add with that? Or
I think he
how would
said
you,
if, that I was thinking.
The interesting thing about us as a duo is, you know, Sarah is our lead vocalist and front woman, obviously, but I'm the talker in the band, so usually I get to where she just like smiles and everything, but yeah, it's sort of how it works. But you know, she has great stuff to say as well. So, but usually she just sort of lets me off the leash, and I just sort of ramble.
Okay. Yeah, that's usually, I think people always expect the front person and the vocalist to be the one to do most of it. But it kind of makes me think of, like with, if you ever hear an interview or watch with the Zombies, with Rod Argent and Colin Blunstone, although Colin, they kind of mix focus, but it seems like Colin is more the voice of the Zombies, but usually it's Rod telling the stories in an interview of what happened and how they did things. So, yeah, if you know who the Zombies are.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah, and I remember growing up. I think maybe one of the reasons I became a bassist was that, you know, my parents always had a radio on. I grew up outside Atlanta, so at that time Fox 97.1 played music from the 50s and 60s. So I grew up listening to a lot of that music primarily, but also, you know, a fair amount of country music and. Not really a lot of classical. I mean, it's not as weird as you would think to meet classical musicians who didn't do the stereotypical, you know, I was 3 years old and taking bass lessons kind of thing. That's not quite as weird as some people may think. But that certainly wasn't me. I grew up listening to a little bit of everything. And I think for me, the cool thing about the bass as an instrument is that it's, really, and if you look at like the great players, like all the way from, you know, you mentioned Carole Kay on your podcast, man, she's just a beast. And then her and James Jamerson, of course, in the 50s, 60s, and then Jaco Pastorius, Victor Wooten, these are all bass guitarists. But at the same time, you know, Gary Carr on the double bass, and then now the Francois Rabat, and of course, Edgar Meyer now, all these people just doing this really insane. It's an instrument that I think rewards creativity and curiosity, and really you can kind of do whatever you want with it on the instrument. Once you add the bow into the mix, it's just a universe of expressive possibility. So, and it was Sarah who was like, well, why not play heavy metal? Why not start trying to figure out how to do this with distortion and things like that? So a lot of it is just combining music we really love. So.
If you would just back up and give me, because I heard this and I want to write this down. The expression or the way you put it just then, when you said the bass is an instrument that
it rewards
creativity.
And I think all instruments do, but the double bass and even the bass guitar, I think, are unquestionably going through a renaissance where there are just really ridiculously creative players on that instrument, on those instruments, and really any style of music you can think of. There's somebody who's just doing something like, just, are you kidding me? Great, you know. And I said, for me, and this is what I love about the double bass, which, you know, if you're listening and you're wondering what that is, the double bass is the huge monster in the back of the orchestra that looks like it could eat a cello. It's not a cello. A lot of people think it is, but it's bigger. A lot of people think I play cello when they see the band because I play with the bow pretty much through the entirety of the Valentine Wolf set. And, you know, we realized, Sarah pointed out, it's kind of unusual to see bass players doing that much work with the bow, not in the context of the symphony orchestra. So, and also doesn't know if I play an electric upright band, but the body's missing. It looks like a big long neck. But that's my intro. That's the big stand-up bass, that's what I'm talking about. And what I said was I just think the universe of expressive possibilities, there's just, you could do anything on it. You really can. Maybe not you can do it.
Pardon?
Maybe you can't hold it under your chin. Other than that, yeah, I think it's pretty well wide open.
You know, I think too when I was around the end of the 90s when I started my jazz combo, I noticed too it was something about that bass, but then something about that the upright or the double bass, just that per, I think one of my friends at WCLK was helping. She'd say, it's that wonderful percussive quality, and it just put the vibrations through your body. I mean, it was just, the sound is tangible when it goes through you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
at least it was to me, and I don't think I'm the only one. So, and when I think of all the bass players that I've had on here recently, I've had Kasim Sultan, and, Carole Kay, my gosh, she is just, you think of the things that she, you know, she talked about the things that she did that when Brian Wilson would tell her, you know, okay, I want a tonic, it fit, all the stuff that to me sounds like just some kind of quadratic equation, but you guys know what it is, and it just blows me away. So, and actually coming up soon, I'm going to have another bass player on, you may know, Julie Slick, that played, I saw her recently with Adrian Belew.
A few years back, we saw the Adrian Belew trio with Stickman, and that was kind of my introduction to Julie Slick. And she's just, another one of those people that are in the "Are you kidding me?" great category. Just super fantastic.
I know. Well, they were at the Terminal West in Atlanta about 2 months ago, and the thing is, too, she, you think about. To me, playing with somebody like Adrian, for one thing, you know, these people got to already be, they got to be away. Yeah, are you kidding me? Good. But then again, she would do things that, to kind of turn around, and because, you know, they you see them, I don't, it's probably a lot of us rehearsed playing tricks on each other, but you would see her turn around and put on these things so that when he looked at her, she had these glasses that like make her, like her eyes are spinning, like her eyes pop out on springs or whatever. You know?
Right on.
And I'm thinking, okay, if these people can play this kind of trick and then keep on playing, you know, during a song, it's got to be fun. Well, how is it, because I'm going to tell you, when I started playing, I did not want to gig with. Oh, first of all, let me tell you, if you're listening live and you want to talk to Lady Sarah and Braxton Valentine Wolf, you can call in at 646-716-9922, toll free within the continental U.S. 646-716-9922, and they'll be happy to talk to you. And so I've got a question, an important question about playing with your spouse, but I'm going to bring in too someone here coming through the beaded door, our friend Duffy Odom. Come on in, Duffy. Have a seat.
Hello. It's so dark in here. I love the candles.
It is.
And those strange lanterns that you have as a backlight. It's just... it's so atmospheric in here.
Just the way we like it.
Well, I kind of tried that.
And Valentine Wolf, I think there's so much that you can talk about. I think you could do a week-long seminar and every day do a different theme and talk about each instrument, your influences, how you got together to make that sound that you make. Another day, talk about literature, and also talk about. It's funny that Braxton does all the talking, but Sarah is the lyricist, and the poetry behind your original stuff is amazing. I don't know if you studied poetry, but some of the schemes that you play and the depth of the literature that you can feel behind it, and of the 19th century, and the shades of new formalism that has come back in your meter and your rhyme, and the and just the classical elements, it's vast. It's so vast, it's very, very. You are very, very, extremely prolific in even when you just talk about your music. When I read the stuff that you say about it, and it's exciting. I've listened to just about every album on Bandcamp, and the stuff that I have to admit, the stuff that I really love. I do. I have seasons where I do this weekly Shakespeare. I do a different play every week and talk about it and do it's very. It's very light. It's kind of humorous. But the last play I did was my second favorite of all of Shakespeare's stuff was The Winter's Tale.
Mm-hmm.
And two plays I love, The Tempest and Winter's Tale. And when I heard your soundtracks for both of those, I thought, why aren't you writing... Why aren't you playing music for major motion pictures? I had chills listening to it. And when you know the story and you go through it and you look at the, and you see the flow of it, it's just amazing. It tells the story in music like I never heard. There's just so much of you. And I really admire you. Great, and it's great. And an hour is just not enough.
You know,
welcome.
Lady Sarah and Braxton, maybe we should.
Go ahead.
I agree. We need much more. We need more. We need more. We're going to have a few more days. But you guys are so busy. I don't know. I mean, you've been very generous tonight to give us this much time. But we'll just have to sweet talk you and beg you and bribe you.
Well, absolutely.
For another show.
Thank you so much for that. I don't really. I had moments when I was listening to you. I was like, "Are you talking about Valentine Wolf, right?" But it's most kind of you. It's just unbelievable for us to know that our music has any kind of impact on anyone, much less what you just
said. Oh my goodness. It's so precise. Everything you do is so precise.
Yeah.
From
yeah.
the Edgar Allan Poe favicon on the top of your, on the tab of your website, and the mm-hmm. the design of everything that you do, the covers, the everything you do
Sarah,
is,
do you
is just. I don't see how you do it.
I know, Duffy. I don't. Lady Sarah, do you remember when I first contacted you years ago?
I refresh my memory. How did
okay.
that happen?
I'm an entertainment publicist, and I had a client at the time. I'm no longer in a professional capacity for him, but we're still friends. James Musgrave.
Oh yes. Okay, I remember that. Yeah.
Pirate song.
And he was writing a book that had to do with set in mid-19th century U.S. and it involved Edgar Allan Poe. And I suggested, I said, you know, while I was drawing up a promotion plan for him, I said, you know, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to find an aspect of this that we can use and promote it into the steampunk worlds and cons, and which was new to him. Of course, he checked it out, and then once he did, he ran running with it. The man is I just adore Jim Musgrave. And I said, well, let's find some music to augment, too. And then I was checking out different people, and then I found you, and I just thought, oh, I'd listen to your music, and I think, if I could only talk them into it. And you were so sweet. You know, you called me back. You took my call. You called me back. You didn't think, who is this woman? You just... and I think you did some things with his lyrics, with Jim's lyrics, I believe. And
I think so.
Yeah, and with his and that set him off into the steampunk world for real. And 2 years later, they were calling him the Godfather of steampunk, or Grandfather of steampunk, or something. But you know, that's how we met back then. I'm going to play a song of yours. I know you've got something new coming out. You've got a brand new CD coming out soon, but I'm going to play something off your most recent, which that was, I believe, A Child's Bestiary.
That is correct.
Am I saying? Okay. And I'm going to play a song from that. But before I was going to say, since you play together, you know, I did not want to play with my husband in a band because I always felt like people turn into, it gets weird or it might be uncomfortable or... people think that the wife or the girlfriend turns into the girlfriend manager from Spinal Tap, and I thought, my marriage is good. I don't want to mess it up by gigging together. And then finally people started saying, well, I'll hire the two of you together, and then we've got the combo. Then later on, and because we play jazz, guys, you're probably aware of how this works, because you guys know, you know, you play in different capacities. I had pretty much a core band, but if some of my musicians had other gigs, you know, I had other people that I would call in. So you have like a core band, but like some backups and like a pool, kind of like Robert Fripp says that King Crimson lives in different people at different times. You know, it was sort of that way. But if we soon began to hear people say that we were the only married couple that they would gig with, and I said, well, why is that? They go, well, a lot of them would fight on stage or stuff or whatever. And I was really shocked to hear that. Whereas, you know, people go, no, yeah, you're the only one that's going to fight. Whereas on the other hand, people would say my husband would say, I wish I could just put a USB cord between your head and mine so that when I want to change something up during a song, you know, you would know what I was thinking. But I feel like you two guys have that going on already. Like, you know, you probably think you probably have some amazing, amazing telepathy. Going on.
Well,
you
I'm
think
not
so?
Sure if it's,
or do you?
Telepathy or not, I do really enjoy getting to perform with my husband, though. I guess it's just really nice because we have so much in common. We both enjoy. I feel like our vision for the music that we want to create together is the same, and we're very lucky that we share very common and very similar goals there. So I think I feel pretty lucky that I get to make music with somebody who has such similar goals to me. So that's nice. We do have to work on the telepathy more, though, because sometimes we try to give each other eye signals and talk to each other. It sometimes works, but maybe not as often as we would like it to. So we're still practicing that, and hopefully we'll have many more years to practice with each other.
It's interesting, too, because, you know, we were very influenced by, you know, you mentioned Robert Fripp and Adrian. I guess I'm a huge King Crimson fan, one of my favorite bands ever, and I was also very influenced. You know, you talk about the dark ambient soundscape. Again, you know, what Robert does now, I mean, I think he changed a bit at the term ambient, because I think I know for a fact, I've been to see him, I've heard him do Q&As, he does not intend soundscapes to be, as Brian Eno would say, as interesting as it was, is ignorable. He intends his solo stuff to be active listening. But that said, that sort of droning, looping guitar type texture, applying that same principle with delays to the double bass, something I'm very, very, very interested in. So what I'm wanting to say is, so, you know, we don't have a drummer. We kind of take the tape technique approach to making drum beats, and people think, oh, well, that's so easy because the drums are the same every time. And oddly, no, they're not. It's weird. things go differently on stage. The energy is just, it's always different. But I agree with everything Sarah said, and she was right. I think probably the infamous Valentine Wolf story was, she wanted to be in a band, and I didn't. And we are, I think, all really lucky that that was one of the first of many arguments I would lose. not going to work, but over the years, it really, I couldn't imagine not being married to my bandmate, because it's just, it's such a integral part of who we are in music. I think if there's a source for what Duffy was saying earlier, and we talk about being pluralistic, we didn't sit down one day and say, okay, well, we're just going to write tons of music. It's just really a very genuine form of self-expression. And the next part is we want to share it with people. And the fact that there are people out there who that it's impacting them, who really enjoy it, is just sort of, it's the most unbelievable feeling in the world. I can't even begin to put it into words. So, but yeah, it's kind of how we approach it. And, you know, I mean, yeah, we, it's like every relationship, you know, we have arguments from time to time, but the new record we're working on that, you know, we'd love to tell you a little bit about, we're really happy because I think we figured out, I had like one moment of frustration, so we had maybe like a tenth, like 3 minute kind of, you know, huh kind of thing going on, and that was pretty much it for this particular record, so, or collection of songs, or whatever you want to call it. I don't even know anymore. But anyway, so there you are.
Well, you know what? Rather, I was going to play a song from A Child's Best Year, but that's what. Well, if you don't mind, since you mentioned the new, I know I've got just a tiny excerpt, which is really more of a preview. I'm going to go ahead and call it a tease.
Sure.
From the new CD. Would it be okay if I went ahead and played that? It's just 2.5 minutes, but just, it's called Softly Shall You Sleep. It's just an excerpt. Would that be okay?
Yes, absolutely. Please do.
Let's go. All right, so that was, I told you it was a teaser, just a little sample, an excerpt from the next CD that's coming up from Valentine Wolf. It's still in production, I believe. And if you're listening live and you want to call in and talk to Lady Sarah Black or Braxton Ballou, the number is 646-716-9922. And what is the name of the new CD, and when can we expect it?
Okay, the CD is called The Elegiac Repose. We are tantalizingly close to finishing it. I was actually doing some work on it before we called in. We are targeting a Labor Day weekend, early first of September release, and right now I think we're well on target to hit that mark where everything. Production-wise, timeline-wise, is coming along really well. The track you played, "Softly Shall You Sleep," is actually a line. I should remember the poet's name, but I don't. But what I do know is that's a line spoken to death, to the maiden, from Franz Schubert's great song "Death and the Maiden." And the interesting thing about that particular track is, even though you can hear Sarah singing on it, it's effectively it's an instrumental track. You pretty much got a great taste of the song and the texture there. You could hear a little bit of everything that makes us. You could hear Sarah's beautiful ethereal vocal layers. You can hear.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of her piano playing on this particular collection of songs. Like when she put in a bunch of these piano parts, I think they were intended to be guide piano parts for me to write my bass lines, but I like them so much. Yeah, she made the remark to me that I kept a lot more of what she thought I would, but I was like, it sounds great. And then you hear my sort of bass line things, and then there's, I think right before the distortion kicks in, there's sort of that droning high ambient texture, which is my ambient double bass going on. So that's a little bit of everything, and we got the title of that song from the poem Death and the Maiden. There's actually a track on the Elegiac Repose called, or the Elegiac Repose, we say it wrong all the time, it's the Elegiac Repose, called Death and the Maiden. It's a 12-minute, we've written a 12-minute and 40 seconds, and we're really excited about that. It's our first epic. But all the songs, I think, on a surface level, deal with mourning and grief and loss. And, I know in 2016 we said goodbye to a lot of, great artists and people we all admired. But for Sarah and I, it hit very close to home. There were eight people who we could change our lives forever. Best friends, mentors, family members, my older sister in particular, that we really, like, we all will be confronted with the reality that, that one day all of this will end. So all the songs sort of deal with that process. And ultimately, though, we end, I think, on a note of hope. While we were researching all the lyrics and working on the themes and everything, we became acquainted with the work of Caitlin Doty. She's got a great YouTube channel called Ask a Mortician. And she's one of the founders of the Order of the Good Death. And when we read through the death positive movement and what that meant, and what that, I remember, shortly again after my sister died, and reading, or really actually a little bit before, when all the indicators were in place that that was the inevitability we were looking at, I remember reading the tenets of the order and thinking, yes, that is me, that's for me. And there's a line in one of Sarah's lyrics, one of our songs, where she sings, "Find some beauty in this death." We were determined to do that. So it made me, again, I'm so happy our music has had such an impact on you, but we're well aware our music is not for everybody. Nothing is for everybody. And, you know, maybe this isn't the CD to put on right before you go to a party or something or whatever. But I think maybe it is. Maybe it's a good way to have the conversation, get some things started and realize that there is one thing that we all have in common as human beings on this planet, and that our mortal existence, at least, regardless of what you believe after that, the mortal coil will come to an end one day. So we wanted to really explore those themes a lot. So 9 tracks, we're pushing, I think anywhere 47, 50 minutes runtime. Sarah's vocals are finished. My distorted bass parts are finished. Yeah, the drums are finished. We're just doing a little bit of ambient bass, touch-ups of ambient bass, and a little bit of some of the, you know, me doing my best Jimi Hendrix impression with some guitar solos is all we have left. And then we've mixed a lot of it in process, so we're rolling pretty well with it. So thank you for letting me, and thank you for letting me talk about that. It's very meaningful and important to both of us to talk authentically about where this music for us has come from. And if it helps somebody get through whatever stage of the process they may be in, whether grief or loss comes in all sorts of guises, then, you know, I think then that's beyond an honor for us. And so, okay, that's
well,
all about. Like,
and I'm grateful for you, you know, for being so open and sharing so honestly with us here. Because, yeah, it is something that does matter. And, you know, and first of all, yeah, last year so many people had so many losses, whether it was – and, of course, if you follow people on Facebook and friends, you know, not only celebrities, like what, just right in a row, you've got, well, Bowie, Prince. For me, last year also meant the passing of Keith Emerson.
Right, Keith Emerson,
as well as Greg Lake, you know, because I'm a Prague girl, okay?
Well, and I mean, Metalhead, the year kicked off. I mean, even in December, we said goodbye to Lemmy from Motorhead, and, you know,
Lemmy, if
you're in the new wave of British heavy metal at all and you distort your double, if you play bass with distortion even a little bit, sooner or later, you know, I think your path is going to take you to, you know, what did Lemmy do? Because he was one of the guys who just created that great growl, you know, that sound. And I mean, it's, you know, something that I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I was always more of an Iron Maiden guy than a Motorhead guy, but, you know, Lemmy go. You know, I remember that was where it all sort of cascaded and began. So yeah.
And, you know, I was so – it was such a shock. And the thing is, I was looking forward to an interview with him on Madame Perry's Salon, because one of the reasons that got me to not just his music, not just his playing, is that that's not enough. I had Rudy Sarzo on, and his book is called Off the Rails, and it's mostly about – just touring, you know, he left Quiet Riot for a while to tour with Ozzy because his friend Randy Rhoads, the guitar player, was in there. And that was the tour where Randy died, you know, the plane crash. But he was talking about different people that you meet, you know, and he was still very new in the business. And he said, so Rudy was talking, you know, talking about the different people he met and so forth, but he said, because, you know, he met one of Lemmy's roadies or assistants or whatever, and he said he'd gone to the store, got about 3 or 4 bags of stuff. He goes, what is it? He says, oh, it's books. Lemmy's a voracious reader. So this guy had like 3, you know, like grocery store kind of plastic bags full of paperback books. And he said, oh, well, that should take you through the tour. He goes, this will take me through the weekend. This guy reads a lot. Oh my gosh! It's, you know, it's sort of like you like somebody, and it just sort of adds another layer. Thinking if he's a voracious reader, what does he read? He must read more than one genre. What? Where is, you know, influence? How does it all tie in? And that's fascinating as well. So, I'm so sorry too that you also lost, as well as so many people and close friends and mentors and teachers. Influence, but also for your sister as well, Braxton. I'm so sorry for that loss and to hear that. You know, when you were talking about the – oh, and I love the gal on Ask a Mortician, that website. She's wonderful. She's somebody we've needed for a while. But recently I saw somebody put a post on a Facebook friend that I hardly know, but she's a writer, and she started with, "It is with great joy, you know, great happiness that I announced that we were all with my father as he made his transition. And like everything in life he did, it was hard. That's just the way he was, but we were all there with him, and he lived a good life." And I thought, what a magnificent way to make such an announcement. I'd never heard that before.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and again, for me, you know, I'll stress it's not for everybody. That's for sure. I think that, you know, and I think that that kind of reflects in our music too. I think that the things that, you know, another one of my musical heroes, you know, Devin Townsend, said something about this, and I kind of adapted it. Just the quote, the verbiage, you know, a lot of the things that work for us in Valentine Wolf, you know, it's debatable whether or not that would work for somebody else or for another band. I mean, our process is sort of kind of what we do, but I think the thing that I think really is powerful and then really I would say essential about the death positive movement is find a process that works for you that doesn't involve, you know, taking these emotions and pretending that they're not real or they're not a thing or they're not happening or whatever, engaging authentically.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been a great, for me personally, it's been a great mechanism for that. And I would say, I'd venture to say, for Sarah as well, especially judging by the lyrics and the melodic content she's written for what we're working on.
And I think too, with this particular writer, it also probably had to do a lot with her family dynamics, you know, and their attitudes and philosophies for this. You know, even though we still have yet to meet in real life, although I do go to Greenville occasionally, and other places where you go, and I guess you're coming back to Atlanta for Dragon Con, aren't you?
We are. We're actually
this year.
We're actually, yeah, this year we're coming back to Dragon Con. We're really excited about that. We're actually going to be in Atlanta before then, though, on August the 4th. We're playing the Spectres Ball with Paul Mercer and the Ghost Project, a few other artists. I should have that right in front of me. I'm actually plugging it up right now, but that's, I think, a Friday night in Atlanta. We're really excited. Some amazing musicians on that particular bill. Really, really stoked for that. And we're playing in Greenville next week at the new location of the Radio Room. We were supposed to be on the Saturday night bill, but we've moved with some of our friends to Sunday night, July 23rd here in Greenville, which we tend not to play Greenville as much as you would think. I don't think it's for any, you know, we're not mad at anybody or anything like that, but I think what works for us sometimes is, again, band conventions, things like that, just tend to work really well.
Uh-huh.
When we do play Greenville, I should say it's not that we don't play. What we do, we really like alternative venues, and one of our favorite, if not our very favorite place to play in Greenville, is the main library, which people are like, that gets some looks, but the library system here is really awesome, and they let us do some really cool things there. We've got two really cool shows coming up in October at the library downtown. So, you know, if you're looking for really awesome stuff, check out your library. So,
some of these libraries have different places. I have a lot going on. And now my sister-in-law teaches at a, I don't know the name of the high school in Greenville, but she's in charge of the drama department, and she just finished 2 weeks ago doing Hairspray.
Okay.
And I said, you know, I would have never thought years ago that Hairspray, that a John Waters creation would be a high school play, but that's a great thing, and she did it, and she had a wonderful time with it. And there's there are some libraries. There's one in Fayetteville, Georgia, that I played at many years ago when a friend of mine had a poetry book launched, and they had buffets, they had by Jeff, and they have things all the time. They have events. So a lot of these libraries are very locked into the community and culture and arts. And so, yeah, that sounds, the main library there sounds fantastic. Now, you two, I also want to play, we're going to end up playing, you've got to come back. It's like Duffy said, you've got to come back, because this is not enough. You've done, I'm going to end up playing The Kraken from A Child's Bestiary as we go out. But when, you've done a lot of work, Lady Sarah and Braxton, with theater. And you've done some film work, or been involved in film work, doing music, and also voiceovers. Tell me how you like doing that and enjoy it, and do you see creating a lot more? Because you do your own, you do some good videos of your own for your music. But, I mean, these are productions for other things, too, Furman University and Warehouse
yeah.
Theater. Yeah, so tell us about that.
I think
how you like it.
We love doing soundtracks. When we were first, I think the first one we ever did was, actually the very first one we ever did was for a one-act play that a local Greenville theater, just amazing theater guy, writer, playwright, director, actor, Jace Thompson wrote. He wrote a one-act play called Lamplight and Shadow that was sort of a teaching unit biography, one act for Edgar Allan Poe. It was like 45 minutes of music. It was, that's really what got us excited to doing Once Upon a Midnight. And that was really where it started. And for me, it was a dream come true. I love soundtracks. I take great inspiration from them. It was where I always, it's something I always wanted to check out. And then from there, the warehouse said, would you like to do Merchant of Venice? Which is, I say, it's very fair to say Merchant of Venice is a very complicated play. And that wound up being just tremendous, tremendous fun for us. You know, we've not been asked to do soundtracks by a theater group in a while. And again, I think just for whatever reason, the stars haven't aligned or whatever. We're not telling people no, we're not doing it or whatever. But what we did do last year at a convention in Atlanta called Monsterama, we scored Nosferatu, which was really a lot of fun dream come true for me. And we're going to bring that back. One of the Greenville Library shows I told you about, we're going to show a screen. We're going to screen Nosferatu, and Sarah and I are going to perform a score live. My part can be mostly improvised. We're still working out how that's actually going to work. And then we're going to take that back down to Atlanta for the first year of the Atlanta Steampunk Exposition in November, which we're super excited about that. Monsterama, though, had so much fun with us doing that. They were like, would you do a different film this year? So they've asked us to do Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, which I'm ridiculously excited about. So, you know, as we're wrapping up Elegiac Repose, you know, we've got these two scoring projects to get done. And I think that, you know, they will likely see the light of day on Bandcamp or our website somehow. We're sort of ironing out the kinks. And, you know, I think people check it out and they have fun at them. They really dig, you like it, you know. But for me, kind of as an improviser, I'm hearing all the stuff. I'm hearing it, you know, Madam Perry, you mentioned you play jazz. You have those moments where it's working and you can tell the audience is digging it, but you know what you're doing is getting yourself out of trouble, right? You know, it's like that kind of maybe just when you're improvising. Sometimes you're like, okay, that ended well, yeah. Yay. So I'm still we're still sort of
arrangements while you wait, while you listen, yeah.
So we're still going to smooth those parts out, but there's definitely more soundtracks and dark ambient things like that in our future, as well as the Victorian chamber metal. I think we love heavy metal. I don't ever envision a time with us not writing and performing heavy metal, but we also love the more ethereal atmospheric music too. So combining them is fun, and then bringing it to you separately in the form of a score, a soundtrack, is also great. And
you know, I usually go. Yes, well, good, because it's you. We'll be thrilled. I don't usually get this tongue-tied, do I, Duffy? But, yeah, I'm do I, Duffy?
No.
So we'll be looking forward to another and another, and of course your regulars on my Halloween shows, specials, and help make those extra popular and successful. You know, usually in Atlanta, the Decatur Book Festival usually falls in the same weekend as Dragon Con, but I think this year it's going to be definitely Dragon Con for me because it's you guys, and then recently we had Frenchie and the Punk on last month,
what?
And they're going to be there, and yeah.
Yeah, we love Pat and Sam. Yeah, great musicians, great people, and actually super influential. Pat's looping record, you know, I lived in the car for a while in terms of me trying to figure out what I wanted to do with some of the ambient bass that I'm working on. So, and there's gonna be some other really great bands that are coming on this year too. So yeah, you will not, if you like us, you will not want to miss it.
Oh yeah.
Well, I'm thinking the Avondale Cinema on the 4th of August, the Spectres Ball, and getting tickets. There's a link on your website, on your calendar.
Yeah,
where you can get tickets, $15 I think, or $10 if you join the Anne Rice Fan Club. But that looks very interesting to me. I would like to hear you as sooner rather than later, and that's coming right up. And
that'd be a good venue for you guys
at Avondale Town Cinema in Atlanta.
We're super excited about it. Paul Mercer deserves all credit for reaching out to us and asking us to be a part of this. We've known Paul for many years. He's actually, you know, I knew his music before we even met him, and there was a lot of, I want to do that on the double bass. So we've gotten to perform with him and Evil Sarah a few times, share a stage with it. It's going to be an honor to be back down there and be a part of it. It's going to be some really fantastic, it's going to be an unbelievable night. I definitely think, you know, if you live in Atlanta, you have a big circle around Friday the 4th.
And Duffy, thanks for bringing that. Thanks for letting us know that it's at the Avondale Town Cinema, because most people do know that place around Atlanta. It's a great venue in a eclectic little area in Avondale. So thanks for bringing that, for giving us that information here on the air, Duffy. So we'll probably all be there. Duffy might even drive up there because he knows everybody in Atlanta. And, in fact, I was looking on Instagram where I posted the picture of this for the show. Even Frenchie and the Punk had put a big Valentine love for it on there for you. So I can't keep you any longer because you've got to finish this next CD. And so go to the website. What is it? Give us your website address.
We're at valentinewolf.com, spelled wolf with an E, so it's WOLFE.com. Valentine is exactly the way it sounds, VALENTINE. So check us out there.
Yes, and you know that on...
I'm sorry?
And on all of my social media, I will also be sharing the website and all this information, so you can always see. If you can't remember or not sure, you know, you can go to my Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or anything else that I have. And I even put this on LinkedIn that you were going to be on tonight. Put it on LinkedIn, Google+, everywhere. So you can go to all my social media and find how to contact Valentine Wolf if you want to hire them to play, or if you want to go see them, or you want to buy any of their music. That's where it will go. And we're going to close with The Kraken from A Child's Bestiary, Valentine Wolf, Lady Sarah Black, Braxton Ballou. Thank you so much, Duffy. Thanks for hanging with me, and thank you all.
Thanks.
We love you.
Love you, bye-bye.